Welcome to Dumb Question. I'm your host, Kent McKay, and I know a lot of interesting people. I bring them on, and I ask them dumb questions. In this episode, Rick Hilton, Calgarian actor and improviser and instructor. We talk about his upcoming production of an improvised Macbeth. This is part one of my chat with Rick Hilton. Welcome to the Dumb Question Podcast.
Awesome. Thrilled to be here.
Here? Where is here?
This yellow room in which we sit.
We could be anywhere. We're in people's ears right now. We're living in someone's head.
Okay. Well, it's clean your ears. It's a mess.
For mumbling, that's a cue for you
that's
to
right.
clean.
It's not us, it's you.
Your ears at home. So, I haven't seen you in 8 months, 9 months, a little bit of a while.
Yes.
So what's going on in the world of Rick Hilton?
Well, I've had your baby, and I was meaning to tell
you. You kept it. Oh. Yeah.
8, 9 months. Lots of workshops. I've been teaching a whole new crop of brand new Calgarians on Keith's vocabulary, and that's been going super well. We have started working on a project, or I'm directing a new Shakespeare. Goes up in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks,
When this comes out, it'll be a week.
So it's coming up soon. we've been working at it in a very eclectic schedule. It's actually taken about 6 months, but we've done it at a very piecemeal way, much like shooting a film, so that it fits into people's real lives. Because, of course, actors in Calgary have got to work, and in order to work, you've got to have the time to do it. It's been once a week we get together, sometimes twice, and we're doing this project. So it's been fairly busy.
That's good.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see it because that's coming up in March 12th, 13th, and 14th.
Friday the 13th, kind of easy to remember, eh?
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Which brings up a point is the Scottish play has historically been...
Are you not allowed to say it? Are we in a theater
I'm calling this a theater space, so I'm going to respect the traditions.
Kind of looks like a workshop space. I guess we're on
Shows have been performed here.
All right, so we'll refer to it as the Scottish
play. I will, even though I'm not superstitious at all.
However, when you're actually working on it, I mean, how do the two main characters address each other, or someone who comes in to speak to the main character? Lord Scottish play... here to wit to the thousands of, you know, it doesn't work.
Yeah, at some point you got to go, okay, we're working on here, let's deal with it.
Right.
I do appreciate the tradition, though.
Okay.
Even though I don't believe there's any...
It's a Scottish play written by Shakespeare that starts with the letter M.
Yeah. For those playing at home...
does it have, it's a good point, you know, the whole spookiness about it, and that's why I chose Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
A, the theater was available.
And everything else followed.
Right. And B, I went Friday the 13th, that works, because the tradition or the heritage of this play has been kind of haunted. And we had discussed that right at the outset on how to address that. There are some actual traditional Calgary actors, very good ones in it, and so I wanted to be careful not to trod upon people's superstitions, right? Has it had some bad luck with me? I mean, how can you put bad luck and circumstance together and say, well, therefore it is? Or did the bad luck happen regardless of whether I was working on this production or not? I don't know.
But at no point did you feel we need to bring an exorcist in.
Shacuse, yeah.
Something's going on here.
Yeah, the Scottish play has caused, you know, my child to move out, which is actually not bad luck.
Well, a couple months ago, I went to Australia and I had a copy of the Scottish play in my bag. I was reading it.
Yeah.
And they lost my bag. nothing but problems. I was held at security at the in LAX. They came up and I'm like, this is, I've traveled a lot. What's the problem here? And I go pull my bag. And I'm like, damn, I got this freaking Scottish plane here. And I'm like, I'm not superstitious, but.
But clearly you are.
Clearly, like yeah. Now I'm like, do I bring this?
Now you are superstitious.
We'll
do a test. Fly with Catcher in the Rye next time.
Yeah, got to see what they mix do. It up. Mix
yeah,
it up.
That's right. I mean, you've done one example of one thing.
Of course, it's bad science.
Do people search for why my bad luck happened, and therefore it must be? I think that's more the case.
Yeah, of course. You know? Shit happens.
Historically, the play's been surrounded by screwed up shit. Where am I allowed to say that?
We'll try to keep it. I think we dropped two S-bombs.
I'm a very sweary guy, so you give a bell.
I can set a little flag.
I apologize to your viewers.
We'll label this as explicit. So this
is two people sitting listening to this in the basement of their mom's house. First of all, move out.
You'll make everyone happy.
Second of all, I'm really sorry for the S-word, but. You know, where were we? We're talking about the hauntedness of it, and
what's creepy? It's a creepy play.
Well, the play itself is creepy, sure.
Yeah.
But is it the fault of the creepiness of the play that in the past historically stuff has happened to actors who've played these roles? I don't know.
Well, I saw an interview with Sir Patrick Stewart, and he had just come off a running of it, and they asked the question, like, "Did you have any problems with it?" And he's like, and he kind of laid out, it's like, well. There's a lot of fight sequences in the play.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not more than less, I don't know, compared to anything else, but there's a lot of intricate fight sequences, a sword fight, there's a lot of grappling and all those type of things. And that alone can lead to accidents, injuries, that sort of thing. And then you add kind of a creepy feel on top of it, people might get a little creeped out of it, like, well, everyone's getting hurt in this thing. What's going on here?
Well, our sword play is awesome. Peter Abrams has been directing the stage fighting, and we actually are using broadswords. But he's doing some really great broadsword choreography. However, he's been more than safe McSaferson, as I like to call him. We did it today in lightsaber mime. So they walk through the steps, right? And they're very familiar with where step here, step there. Touch wood, that hasn't been a danger issue. Let's see what happens after it's done. At this moment, sure, people have gotten sick, but it's February.
What production hasn't had someone out sick ever?
I don't know. So, well, for your sake, call it the Scottish play. But I'm color me dubious.
Yeah, if you want to drop the M-bomb, hey, that's on you. That's on you. I just, there's right. So few traditions in my line of work that we can still carry on.
Right.
And I think this is, it's a fun little tradition to go.
Sure. I mean, if it slips out, you might have to get the beeper out.
Well, we'll get the beeper out.
Swear or say that.
No, if you drop a series of expletives, we'll just mark it.
And okay.
They've been pretty clean so far, which is pretty good.
All right.
But it's good. Yeah, we're excited for that. I thought, because I'm trying to attend the 13th.
Nice.
I thought, bring a black cat or my neck.
The on the 13th or more than the other 2 days. I mean, I go, wow, people are really getting into the spookiness of it.
You come up first thing, you break a mirror, and just we'll be done with it.
Well, and, we've had a couple of discussions, I guess, about things like how to show this beheading.
Yeah.
Because beheadings right now are really not cool.
They're topical.
They're topical, but for the wrong reasons, right?
Because before they were really hip, right? It was really hip. People were into
it. It wasn't like a pop culture, you weren't seeing beheadings on Facebook.
Yeah.
But now we are. And so we've had some discussions about that.
Oh.
That's kind of creeped us out, wondering... How do we deal with this? Be respectful, or do we do it Bugs Bunny? It's still up in the air. We haven't answered that yet.
It'll be interesting to see what you guys
come
up with.
It'll be different, but keep your expectation bar low, because we honestly don't know what to do.
Have there been previews? I didn't see anything about previews.
We haven't done any, but we may do one. We're in the Engineered Air on Wednesday, March the 11th. And we're going to run it. Maybe we could treat that as a preview dress. We would be keen on getting some people to come, because it's improvisation and we need an audience.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing mostly the hard lifting of the project, and you can't rehearse improvisation. You can workshop the skill sets needed for it and be prepared, but you can't actually rehearse an improvisation. So yet here we are rehearsing a production and quite a lot of rehearsals. You know, less than a typical play, but significantly more than what you do for an improvisational show.
Which is show up an hour before.
If you're lucky, and hopefully you're sober, and, you know, you get your pants on and go.
Am I wearing pants? Good. I'm good. I'm set. I'm warmed up.
You're warmed up.
Well, speaking of warming up, I thought it was funny. Some of the stand-ups in town are trying to get together with the improvisers and mm-hmm. trying to, like, create new shows that where both things happen and maybe get some sketch writing and try to...
Wow.
Thing. And there's been some, I won't say tension, but...
Totally.
Miscommunications between the groups because, right. You know, it's like improvisers warm up by clapping and saying each other's name.
Yeah, and pointing
at
each other.
And stand-ups warm up by, you know, maybe drinking, mm-hmm. you know...
Smoking. Yeah.
Being sullen,
yeah.
You know...
Anyone that liked to... how to phrase this without swearing... before a show, an oral gratification to his genitalia.
Ah, that's a traditional warm-up.
Traditional warm-up.
So in these two groups meet, everyone's like, yeah, we're all in the same industry.
Yeah.
But no. It's like there's some different no. mind.
Well, I worked in the stand-up club for 8 years, emceeing, doing 20-minutes. We even headlined a couple of nights, did a 40-minute improv bit. And the it is night and day. I liked and got along with most of the stand-ups, but there was a definite antipathy, and it's worldwide, and you're never going to stop
different
it.
Energy, different, coming out from a different angle, and
yeah.
It's...
They don't respect the lack of writing, and the improvisers don't respect the boring repetitiveness of a stand-up routine. Did you hear that, my friends?
You told that same joke last night.
That's
it's
right.
Like, yeah, that's
yeah.
The point.
And the night before, and for the last two years.
It's a five-year-old joke.
That's why they tour. Everybody's seen your bit, right? So that antipathy is real and pronounced. And you, good luck trying to get that community, those two communities together.
Yeah,
I wish you luck.
It's been stop and go. Like, there's some people who have, some stand-ups who are starting taking improv classes.
Sure.
And that type of thing. And it's all
within. The improvisers should write.
Should write. I mean, because it's my, I mean, you being one of Keith's first students, like first or second classes, was it?
I'm a second class first student.
it's my understanding that Keith developed the process to get through writer's block, to be able to write.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Well, that's where the word block came from. Because that's what you feel, everybody who's been in front of a keyboard or in the old days typewriter, and you've sat down and tried to put something down, at some point it's inevitable where you will stop and go, duh.
What? Nah, yeah.
What was I doing, you know? And that's a form of a block, right? It, there's no reason why you can't continue to write infinitely all the time. But human nature takes over and you stop. So it's just making sure the stoppages aren't inhibiting the production. But you eventually get back to writing again. So.
Yeah, so for a stand-up, like, I'm having a hard time writing a stand-up. It's very, well, probably not the most difficult, but it seems to be, it's very challenging.
Right.
But taking improv helps that. And so, I mean, I'm glad to see more local stand-ups or stand-ups in general taking improv, even if they never become improvisors.
Mm-hmm.
The techniques are all...
They are, and in fact, it's one of my another one of my ambitions is, and I'll do this one day, I think that the road to good writing through improvisation should merge, or can merge. I want to go down to the cave, old friend of mine, and actually, within parameters of like a précis or a synopsis, improvise new material that then I can write, and do some stand-up, just all by self, not doing... a word at a time alone, but doing reflections on my life, on what I think. You know me, I beak off about a lot of stuff, and why not get a microphone and do it in front of a bunch of drunks?
Now it makes sense.
You know, I think it. I'd love to be political about it. Crave one of the things I crave is to be able to go out and rant about the things that really piss me off. Sorry, another one. In the world in which we live today, including all things political and societal, but in a hopefully not boring way.
Yeah, because if you do that on the street corner, nobody's going to make eye contact with you. They're going to keep walking.
But that Hyde Park, the Speaker's Corner I've seen, and it's just awesome to watch these guys basically stand up.
Yeah.
They've got this stuff written, but they got to improvise at some point because people start to throw stuff back at them. I found that riveting. I was blown away by that.
Hmm. Yeah, because that's one of, like, when you hear stand-ups talk about, like, when people yell, either heckle or just interject something. Something happens in the room. Someone gets drunk. Someone knocks something over. And the things that happen in those moments are often, like, the best thing that happened in that show. And I'm like, that's improv all night.
Beautiful.
that moment is...
Beautiful. Well, let's to go back to the project. This is sort of to talk about myself, but... that's one of the things I'm trying to convey to some really good actors we've got in it who have more of an acting background than an improv background, that it's about the wheels falling off and how you deal with them that makes you a joyful improviser, you know, that, and the audience loves that. If it was rehearsed so that it was so perfect, well, there's no chance for the wheels to come off, and the wheels must come off at some point. And it's how you deal with the wheels coming off that really makes for a glorious night. And the more relaxed you are and open-minded and willing to kind of go with the mess-ups, the better. And in fact, you should embrace them. And there's got to, Keith would always say, make at least 6 mistakes a night. At least, you know, he was angry if it went well, you know. He'd go, well, that ran too well. Because it's better to be seen as a joyful improviser than a skilled one.
Right. I'm sure you've seen the clip of, like, Madonna turfing it at the award show.
I saw the picture. I didn't see the actual YouTube thing.
She's wearing this huge cape, and the cape and stairs, which
bad combo.
Bad. Yeah, you can see
bad
it. Combo. You can see it not working.
She should have asked. So many of us have tripped on stairs with capes.
Yeah, she's walking out, and someone is. I don't know if the cape was supposed to come off or something.
Right.
Basically, the cape hooks on someone, and just pulled backwards, which is the worst.
Off the stairs backwards.
Off the stairs backwards into the thing, and I'm thinking, and she's surrounded by backup dancers, so if everyone was, like, cognizant of it, you'd think that they could...
They would have caught her.
They would have caught her or recover somehow.
But they're not. They're so focused on the moment of their choreographing that the improv doesn't happen. They're not there. They're that actor, you know, having to step, where they could be a real human being going, catch the poor lady.
Catch her, move, turn her around.
Turn her around.
Keep her on the beat.
So she wiped right out, eh?
It was horrible. Like, it's not funny, but it's, like, just as a moment of... This is what can happen on stage.
Even to the brightest and best and
even
the greatest
the
of
most
stars.
Experienced.
And a little bit of you like that, right? Come on. There's Madonna falling off the stage.
Wait, hold it. Is she okay?
Yeah.
Okay, now it's
now
fun.
Now I'm going to laugh. Yeah, which is how Keith would say to make all falls, he's okay. And it allows you to laugh. People go, okay.
Meanwhile, his knees bent backwards.
Because that was funny, Madonna.
Get him out.
Do it again. No, I'll Google that.
It's interesting just to see, like, everything go wrong precisely as one sitting back watching it would expect. Mm-hmm. It's like in the moment you're probably. Like, I'm sure she did it 20 times flawlessly.
Yeah.
But somebody would have went. It's a long cape. It's a long. It's huge. It's all
those backup dancers need improv classes. You know, pay attention to the moment you're in.
Or stunt coordination or something to go watch.
Yeah, you think dancers would be better at that.
Yeah, you're dancing, but this is a moment where you're going to have to watch.
You're going to have to stop dancing and catch the poor gal.
Because she's in heels and the whole bit's like, this is a moment where...
She could get hurt.
Catch her if she falls and help her out and no one's going to be mad if the guy stopped and flipped the cape off of her. And
they would have applauded wildly. You know what it's like when a stumble happens on stage. And there's that awkward pause where you can see the actor go in his head. And the audience goes, it's like they're being tickled. And whatever happens next is perfect.
Yeah.
Because any recovery is what you're looking for. And the moment you do that, the audience just loves you. But if you deny that, if you try to, that didn't happen, and move forward, they go awkward and it's not the same response.
Yeah.
Embrace the failure. The wheels fall off. You're lucky to have them falling off. You know, it's the best thing that can happen to you in an improv stage show is for it to actually go wrong.
in the safest way possible.
Well, I don't like the safe way.
I wouldn't wish injury on anyone, but...
No, of course. So you don't want injury. I'm talking imagination going wrong.
Yeah.
Your story going wrong. The words weren't said as you thought they were going to be. Those are the mistakes that are commonplace and normal. And that's what makes us human. And the audience are all filled with humans, and they embrace it when they see themselves reflected on stage. I'm watching real human failure here, and it's, he's okay!
Oh, that's so good.
Sorry for laughing.
No, it's good. That's so good. Because you always see that, and like, meanwhile, you're like, yeah, is he really?
Right.
But at the same time, you're like, you get permission to...
But the actor has to be okay.
Has to be okay.
Because the play's got to end, and you can go see the doctor when it's over. You know, suck it up. Welcome to theater. Could have been a doctor, but no.
No. So what would you have been if you didn't fall into improv?
Corporate lawyer. In fact, I'd already been accepted in 3 or 4 schools. This is the greatest disappointment of my parents' life. I'd already written the LSATs. I'd been accepted in Osgoode Hall. So for those of you who know, it's kind of one of the better schools in the country, at law schools. I was up there in the GPA department. You know, I had all the bells and whistles of this guy is going into law for sure. I was taking law classes at the U of C because I'd finished my undergrad degree early. But that was the irony, is that I'd finished it early. All the requirements were done by my second year. And I had all of these electives to fill. So I was living / sleeping with a stage manager at the time. And she said, oh, you know, I want to keep my GPA high. That's the big goal, yeah. So I get in the race school. And I don't care how, and I want to write as few exams as I can. She says, I know this new professor is coming into town named Keith Johnstone, and why don't you take an acting class? And I thought, oh, yeah, what the heck? I liked, the drama girls I dated in high school. I didn't have any issues with it. And I took this class at the same time that I was taking 600-level grad classes and first-year undergrad law classes. And I loved his class so much, it changed my life. And I did a complete 180 and said, I wrote to Osgoode, when I'm not coming. And I think probably to this day they go, has anybody ever said no?
to without degrading it, basically to run off and join the circus.
Correct. Correct. And I love that idea, without juggling, no juggling. No, he and his work changed my life.
Wow.
Life-changing moment.
Yeah, I'm sure it has a lot of people, everyone who's he's taught has either gone on to, kept with it, or if they went off and did other things, I'm sure that training stayed with them.
Well, I wasn't in the drama department at the university. And if I look at the people who graduated from the drama department in the same year as me, the ones that were all the main stage, Wojciech and Three Penny Opera stars, and the big-name actors from that drama department, none of them are working today. And I still am. And I was never meant to be working as a performing artist. You know, I'm supposed to be a lawyer. So what's that all about?
You can't plan. It's improv rule 7 or whatever. You can't plan.
Over. You know, my advice would be know those life-changing moments when you see them and embrace them. Sure, I'm a poorer man financially because of it. But am I poorer? I don't think so. I have had a life, and I've got a lot of amazing relationships because of it.
Wow.
What's that worth?
How do you prepare us on that?
Yeah, and all that crap in my head that's floating around that comes out every now and then. What's that worth? You've seen it.
Because as a lawyer, yeah. I'm sure you could not have...
Way less fun.
You could not have said...
I would have hated myself.
If you tried to microwave a baby as a lawyer,
right.
there'd
yeah.
be problems.
Yeah. That's right. People would object in a very big way. And I would probably be struggling to get out of the profession, get as rich as I can so I can not be that. Whereas I look at this now, I go, I can see doing instruction like this for as long as I can speak. I don't even need to stand. I can do it from a chair. You know, this play that we're working on, I'm having the time of my life. It's rehearsals are awesome. I crack up. I can't wait personally to see it. Because it's going to be so different each night.
Right.
And we're doing it in a film-type method, so it's a bit disjointed, you know, going back and forth, jumping around. We probably won't run it until we do it.
Yeah, no.
And it's like, I can't wait to see it.
Right.
I really am looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Now, it's a pretty short play. It's one of Shakespeare's shortest.
Yeah, we'll make it a lot
longer. So did you, like, punch it up? Is there things to add? Did you add anything?
No, we haven't added. Well, have we? Well, what we have done is we've maintained some stuff that I've been doing a little research on Macbeth. I knew nothing about the M play before I started. And now that I'm in it, I've been doing a little reading on it and how other directors have been tackling it. And there's some chunks that directors just cut right out because it doesn't make any sense. It seems gratuitous to the play. They're correct. But I'm sticking them in too because that's what all the scripts have in them, and therefore I'm going, well, let's stick it all in there.
Wow.
So am I punching it? No. Am I adding anything? No. But I'm subtracting nothing. Every single scene will be done.
Wow.
Every single, all of them.
Because I know with Hamlet, we had to go in there with a hatchet and
cut 5-hour play. Come on.
And cut out.
We cut out Norway, for heaven's sakes.
You cut out the whole subplot.
Yeah. You never saw Fortinbras.
And cut out big chunks of it, which... In many productions, that never made sense anyway. Like, you have to be really careful what you take in and out. So, with the Scottish play, like, being able to do everything. Because for me, it was always like, once he becomes king and things go to shit for him, and then there's all the political wrangling, and there's all the scenes where two people come together, talk politics, and then leave. Mm-hmm. And it's like... And they're all got Scottish names, and I can't keep them all. Who's supposed to be king and who's not? And it all becomes this big muddy mess of politics, and it's like, I don't like this part.
Well, you bring up really good points, because that's been the common denominator with a lot of Shakespeare's plays, is it's inaccessible. People go, what? Who? What? What's that guy? You know, you're like the guy in the movie theater that gets lost,
right.
Keeps asking questions about who's doing what, and it was never meant to be that way, I think. A lot of people have theories of Shakespeare, but I think he wrote it to be the simplest of plays at the time.
Well, yeah, because like when we watch Shakespeare, we have the benefit of having studied Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And we get confused. The audience, the groundlings in the
never
globe,
have never
seen this shit before.
So how did he make it? How can those idiots understand it? Because they were idiots. And yet it's seen here in North America or modern days as being... Ooh, you got to be a professor to follow through with this. That's crap. So what you'll find is this play will be easy to follow. It'll be like watching a wrestling match. I haven't had to dumb it down in any way. It's just made it clear. You know, at least that's my goal. Come see and tell me if I did it right.
Well, it's good. Yeah, because I've seen a couple versions of it, and some are more clearer than others, but there's still that muddy part. But 3/4 of the way through, it's like,
you know, as much Shakespeare as I've been in and done, this was a play I have never read or seen a production of.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that on purpose because after Hamlet, I was over at Keith's house. And I'm for those of you at home, and or should I just say Larry? If you're listening.
if Edwin's listening to this, thank you for watching.
Keith Johnson's a British theater professor that taught me all this crazy vocabulary. I asked him, I'm looking around for another project. I like Shakespeare, but, you know, some of it I don't like. And he goes, well, make sure you pick something you don't know very well. And he reminded me of that Tempest that he did. First time I met Keith before he took his class was watching his version of the Tempest at the University of Calgary. I was the house manager. So I got to watch the tech and all four shows. And after it was over, and it was an awesome production, by the way, it's just mind-boggling. He's standing next to me as they're striking, and I go, Professor Johnson, can I ask you a question? He goes, how did you do this? Like, it was just this amazing thing with bands and flying things and people in tights and winged things. That was marvelous from beginning to end, and I was stunned by it. And he goes, well, it's because I chose a play I knew nothing about. I don't want to be tainted by another man's viewpoint. And I honestly knew nothing about the Scottish play. I didn't take it in high school. Never read it before. First time I read it was when I decided, well, we should have a crack at it. So I thought, well, I better read it.
I think at least once at some point.
Yeah, and I haven't watched a production since. I've done some reading about other directors, but I haven't actually seen anything by anybody. So I honestly don't know what anybody else has done.
Hmm.
I have no clue, and I don't want to until after it's over.
That's a fresh take on it. I always like... Even at the hint of a project, we'll try to consume as much of the material as I possibly can.
That's the analytical in you, right? You got it, the data guy.
That's how you do it, right? Yeah. That's how you understand a beach, is you count the grains of sand, right?
Yeah. This was kind of a different approach because I'm merging improvisation with the narrative. So there is no playbook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said to the actors today when we were kind of stumbling through a tough section, and Lady M was really giving me some hard questions. And I could tell that in her mind she was going, WTF is going on with this thing here that you call? And I said, we're inventing something here. We started the process with Hamlet, and we're taking it a little further here because I'm still inventing the process,
right,
of how to put these grand literary stories with improvisation. So, honest to God, no one knows the answer yet. And as the same as we didn't know the answers when we first started doing improvisation as a performance piece to begin with. That was madness. Improvisation was meant as a workshop for actors and plays. A performance piece? Have people pay to come watch you improvise? John Cleese says that's like having people pay you to look at your dirty laundry, which is where dirty laundry got their name from. So, yet this madness of doing improvisation in front of an audience is now what? You know, everywhere.
Established, it's understood, yeah.
In this yellow room we sit in, it's all over. There's 150 groups in L.A. alone doing improvisation. That didn't happen in 1976. So, yeah, I've been involved in the creation of something new. And that is the interesting part to me. That's the greatest thing, not the ultimate just keep performing it. I'm kind of bored with that, frankly. but what's interesting, what keeps my interest in this art form, is the constant creativity, the constant creation. And this project of merging improvisation with Shakespeare, we're inventing something here that I don't know what it will look like when it's done.
Wow.
I don't know if we're even finished it yet. I knew we started it with Hamlet. And I don't think we finished it yet. So come see and see how far along. I don't think this is finished, you know? He says, holding the script in the air. I give you the visual for the people at home, right?
It's like, whoa, whoa, slow down.
What is radio? Yeah.
Two of my interview with Rick Hilton and all past episodes, go to standupcomic.ca.